Hello, this is Janet Gallen with Love Letters Live and another wonderful guest and wonderful story. And I want to introduce Larry Hoogasian, who is, many of you probably know, one of the biggest names in flowers in San Francisco. And Larry, I just want to go right to you because I know it's a family business and that you have a really interesting history. Your grandfather started it?
Yes. He had come from Armenia in the late or early 1900s. Mm-hmm. And my family had to drop everything they were doing and start over. And
what were they doing?
My ancestors are jewelers.
Oh, in fact, so still in the world of beauty.
Well, yeah. We think we work with nature's jewels.
Yes.
In fact, Hoogasian literally is translated into son of a jeweler.
Really? Okay.
In
Interesting
Armenian.
To know. The S-I-A-N part is the son of?
Son of, yes.
Because a lot of Armenian names I know, they're, yes. Uh-huh. Nice to know that. Okay. What was the first thing they did when they got here?
I'm not exactly sure.
Oh, okay. And how did they shift into that?
I know that somehow they came through and had to stay in Mexico for a year or two because there was a certain quota of how many people could come in. And my grandfather went ahead and came to San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not exactly sure how he got started doing it, but he was... had a violet cart that he used to push up and down Market Street.
Oh, gosh, how wonderful. So many of the biggest, most successful businesses started like that, with a cart.
Well, it's kind of humorous because we don't really know exactly how he established his first flower stand here in San Francisco. I think he just...
But he had the very first?
Well, he's accredited with having one of the first... I think he just probably got tired of walking up and down Market Street and stayed in one place.
Wait, and that first one is still here, though, right?
No, it was down on Market Street.
Oh, okay, but there's another one that is yours.
Well, one that is ours is on Post Street. Mm-hmm. The original Gump's store was there, and my father operated that for over 50 years. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, Gump's moved down the block, but we're still in... at the same location.
Yeah. Well, how did his children and then you fit into this? I mean, was it your father who made the business bigger, or what was the progression of that?
Well, my father had several flower stands at the time, mm-hmm. and different flower locations for flower shops over the years. And it basically was a mom-and-pop operation until my brother and I took it over.
Oh, so even your father kept it...
Well, they had several smaller locations, but we kind of transformed it.
Okay, so how did you transform it?
By marketing and...
But so you had actual shops instead of stands.
Right.
And then...
Mm-hmm. We had... when my brother and I took over our business, my folks had the flower stand in front of Gump's.
Mm-hmm.
We also had... A flower shop on Treasure Island, which was a Navy base.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It was,
now, go ahead.
It was during the Vietnam conflict or war, and a lot of the GIs were shipped out of Treasure Island, and they would stop and send flowers to their mother or their sweethearts.
Yes, that's just essential.
Before they went off.
Yeah, oh, my goodness, yes.
And
That's a little heartbreaking because for some of those boys, that was, oh my goodness.
It was probably one of the last thing they did here. And we also had at the same time, a flower shop in the cannery on Fisherman's Wharf. And it turns out that the owner of the cannery handpicked his original tenants, from the locations or places that he did business at. And he used to buy his flowers from my father at our little flower stand at Gump's. And I think the thing that cemented their relationship was apparently he got a particular color rose. He used to love this orange rose called Tropicana.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't the hardiest rose in the world, and I guess he got a bunch of them, and they didn't do well, and my father insisted on replacing them for free. And that was kind of the the type of business that the owner of the cannery wanted. His name was Leonard Martin.
I have a question that I've this is going to be not such a smart question, perhaps, but you can tell me. There was a movie with Hugh Jackman, I forgot what it was called, and he played the part of somebody who had come back from another, maybe you know the name of the movie, it doesn't matter, I guess, and with Meg Ryan, and at one point there somebody went to send a bouquet of flowers to a woman he wanted to court, and Hugh Jackman stepped in and said, "You have chosen all the wrong flowers. This one stands for death, and that one stands for..." Just all these horrible things, and then helped him pick the flowers that really stood for other things. Is this just totally made up in the movie, or is there such a thing as choosing a bouquet that... Because flowers really do speak for us. Obviously, you send them to say something.
Well, yes, no, that's... I don't know all the particular meanings for different types of flowers, because I don't think they're all the same as someone's list of what each one means.
But do they say different things to you?
Yeah, well, when I get an order to fill, I generally will first look at where it's going, who's sending it, and what the card reads.
What do you look for with where it's going? Something they don't have already?
No, just the surroundings. If it's going to a business or a residence.
Oh, I see.
But more importantly, who's sending it, what the occasion is, and what the card reads. And then I interpret what types of flowers to use, and unless they insist on a particular combination.
Is there something you do consciously to interpret, or is it a feeling?
Well, if it's an occasion, an anniversary or a love, or I try to incorporate colors and types of flowers that convey that feeling. If it's an anniversary, I generally will insist on putting a red rose or two in it. If it's a business gift, we kind of steer away from a romantic-looking bouquet.
So you do kind of exactly that. You choose flowers that speak a certain message.
Yes. And
I like that.
Kind of have, over the years, developed a way of arranging flowers to give that feeling.
Yes. So in other words, you can be trusted to send the right message.
Hopefully, yeah.
Let's take a minute and give, if you care to, a website or phone. How can people reach you? I mean,
well, our
listeners, if there's somebody you want to trust to send the right message.
We have a very easy phone number.
Go ahead.
Which is 1-800-BAY-AREA.
Oh, good. Okay. 1-800-BAYAREA.
And we also have the 415 version of that.
Okay.
But we also have another number that's easier to dial, I think.
Go ahead.
It's 885-4321.
Oh, that is easier. 885-4321. Area code 415.
Right.
885-4321.
Trying
Thank
to
you.
Work up some kind of
yes.
Mental image
sure.
of using a piano with 88 keys and then
That's
five
cool.
fingers.
Oh.
I don't know.
Do you play the piano?
No.
Oh, that's great, though. That's wonderful. So there, it's a romantic thing like jewelry. I mean, it makes
yes.
sense. You know, they're both kind of love offerings. Was there what you would call a heyday for flowers in San Francisco or in general in society? Or is it always a heyday for
well,
flowers?
Well, San Francisco used to be a... Well, it still is, but it's during the 60s. Late
right?
60s, flower children.
Oh, that, and also, but I mean, orchids for proms and graduations, and there were...
That's still
Is
happening.
That still... Oh, nice.
It was funny, I found some old flower catalogs from when my folks were operating the flower shop. Pictures of different styles of arrangements back in the 30s and 40s and 50s, and some of the corsages were shoulder corsages that go all the
way
down.
Oh, you know something? I remember a friend of my parents. Oh, my goodness. Yes, her name was Myrtle. And I was at their house sleeping over at their daughter's, and she was going to a formal dinner dance with her husband someplace. Oh, my goodness, yes. And she had a black strapless evening gown on, and she, out of gardenias, somehow made a strap that went from the front of the gown to the back, and the strap of that dress was all gardenias. And that was, I'll tell you, that was like in 1951 or something, and I still remember, I can picture it.
Those are the type of things that people did with flowers. I remember seeing one that I thought was humorous. They had like a flower muff, you know, the muff that they put, you put your hands in the room.
Right. Sonia Henie kind of a thing on the ice rink.
Right.
Oh, that's great. I wish this were a television moment so people could see the smile on your face when you're telling these. So it's still the heyday for flowers. I did the flowers myself for my daughter's wedding, all from you down at the Flower Mart. And they were exquisite. Your choices of flowers when you go into the shop down there are just...
Well, the flowers that we obtain from our suppliers are flowers that generally aren't seen by the public.
I've never seen some of these at all, by the way. In tulip season, there were tulips that were just amazing. Talk about the silver roses, you said?
Well, the sterling silver have a real history with our family. They were my mother's favorite rose.
And let's describe them for those who don't know. They're kind of a beautiful pale lavender shift.
Pale lavender, and they have an exquisite fragrance. They don't last as long as other varieties of roses. And that's one of the things, when they first came out, they weren't very strong, and they usually go through their cycle in a day or two.
But you get that scent.
Right. And they weren't very economical.
Oh.
And my mother insisted on having them all the time in our flower shop, and people thought she was nuts because...
From the selling point of view.
Right. But that carried on, and it became something that our family always had, and unfortunately, in the last few years, most of the growers have discontinued growing.
Oh, because of the economic
disadvantage?
Oh.
And there was only one grower left. They're a family... nursery.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
In Petaluma. And there are two families. They're the Nevy family. And Robert Nevy was the person that kept growing them and basically grows them for us.
Gosh.
He does sell them to other...
Are they hybrid? I mean, are they man-made or developed, or do they grow in nature somewhere?
Most of the roses are crossbred or hybridized. Funny note on that is a lot of the names that come out of the roses are the person that hybridizes them gets a name. So there was a...
Fair enough.
A point in time, there were a lot of women's names for roses.
What is the orange one called that you were talking about earlier?
Well, it's not available anymore. It was called Tropicana.
Yes.
There was another one called Mercedes. And there are several different types of orange that...
There is still an orange that I've seen that is so flame orange.
I'm not sure what the exact name of it is. Well, because a lot of the... every year there are new varieties of roses that come out.
Oh, I see.
They crossbreed them for petal count, color, longevity. And what was curious or interesting to me was, and I found out through Mr. Nevy, that the growers don't own the rose bushes. They lease them. The person that hybridizes them has a patent on them.
Interesting.
And they lease them for a certain amount of time, and then they have to dig them up and...
Oh, my goodness.
Destroy them.
You're making a face. I am, too.
But... It's big business.
Yes. That's like, isn't that like the genetically owned grains and seeds? I mean, that's the same kind of thing, isn't it?
Well, way back, tulips were in Holland.
Yes.
Were a form of money.
Oh, I could see why. Yeah, sure.
Some of the history on it, you could for one tulip bulb, you could buy a cow or a
sure
or a few of them, you could buy a house.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you something, though. Getting back, I find that really disturbing that you have to dig them up and throw them away. Is it bothersome to see, for you to see that kind of callousness? Or have you?
Well, I'm kind of removed from that. But I think, and I could be wrong, but I think after a certain amount of times, the plants don't produce as well as they.
Okay, so there would be a natural end to it anyway, so we don't have to feel like they're being murdered or anything.
Right.
Okay, good.
And the new colors that come out are nice. There's a number of roses that are and flowers that are coming from Ecuador and Colombia.
Oh, yes.
They have kind of an edge on the local growers because they really don't need to house the plants in a greenhouse. They just need to protect them from the sun. And
I see.
And because they have the right climate.
Do you have a favorite flower personally?
I like carnations.
Oh, interesting. I like the scent of carnations.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
Some of the scent of most of the carnations has gone away.
I wonder if that's somehow kind of a gender thing, because the men, you know, the boutonnieres, the things that the men wear in their lapels have kind of always been carnations. Is that something you think men like better? I've known men who are like carnations.
Well, I think they're... I can see why.
They're hardy.
Just from the flower aspect, they're very hardy.
Right.
They won't wilt as fast as other carnations. They're not a feminine type.
That's right. So you're getting back to the
flower.
Same thing. They kind of aren't really, because I like ranunculus, and I have tuberoses because of the smell. But I have a whole list of favorites. Well, a short list of favorites.
A lot of people do.
I guess they do. Yes. That would make sense. And your children are in this business?
I personally, I never was married, and I don't have any children.
Oh, I see.
I have plenty of nieces and nephews, and great nieces and nephews.
Okay, so same idea, though. I mean, that will the next generation be taken?
I'm hopeful that my nephew is now working with us.
Oh,
and,
nice.
I'm hopeful that my niece will come back to the flower business. She's doing something else now.
You had mentioned that when you were younger, you weren't sure what you were going to do when you were going to college. So that wasn't an obvious slam dunk that you were going to go right into the family business?
No, I wanted to go into architecture.
Oh.
My mother wanted me to go to the Art Institute here in San Francisco. But I thought that was a little bit too much up in the air.
In what way?
Well, it's just I couldn't see the...
Oh, being able to work after... Yes,
right.
What do you do with it? Yes. Do you paint? Do you do something on your own in that area?
Not as much as I like, but I usually translate my abilities into flower
making. Well, there is that famous show, and I forget what it's called, but it's Art and Flowers. They have it in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. What is that called? Just remind me.
Bouquets to Art.
Yes.
Right.
Bouquet to Art. And people take famous paintings and
right.
somehow make replicas of the feel. Oh, it's really, that's once a year, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
For those of you who are in the San Francisco area and have not seen it, it's really something to see. So I want to jump to you and Rotary, because I know that you're involved in Rotary right now.
Yes.
May I ask what it is you do and what it means to you and what you hope to see done through Rotary?
Well, there's a lot of things at Rotary.
How did you get drawn into it?
Well, the history of Rotary is, I'll try to make it as quick as I can. San Francisco has a large Rotary club here in San Francisco called the Number 2 Club because they were the second club in the world that was established.
Oh.
And my brother belonged to the Number 2 Club. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, that was the only club that was allowed in San Francisco. They were 400 to 500 members. It was huge.
And this is to get philanthropic works done.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And then at a certain point in time, about 20 years ago, they kind of eased up and they said that they wanted to expand Rotary and have smaller clubs in different areas. And basically, I was told to go join the Rotary Club of Fisherman's Wharf.
By whom?
By my brother.
Oh, okay. And that's been satisfying to you, though?
It has been. I didn't know what I was getting into.
What did you get into? What do you do?
Well, I kind of felt uneasy at first because everyone was in a suit and tie and mm-hmm. all that. And thank goodness they had allowed women to be part of Rotary because mm-hmm. the longest time it was a men-only club. Mm. And I found that over the years that the women are getting more things done than the men.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What do you think?
Well, they're just more persistent about getting things done.
That's really interesting. I think women are also organized in a way.
Yeah, that's
the things that I've been. Uh-huh.
You can pull that out of me. Yeah, I mean, uh-huh. there's a lot of reasons.
Well, I'm just saying that for myself and the things I've been involved in. The women are so organized and generally do get yes.
Right.
So what are the projects that are most meaningful to you?
Well,
local or worldwide?
They're all types of projects. One of the biggest projects as a combined effort of Rotary was the elimination of Polio Plus. Polio Plus is a new strain of polio that's come back.
I didn't know that.
And
what's the plus for?
It's just a new strain.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know anything about polio. And apparently it's a virus that you can
yes.
catch like a cold.
Oh, yes.
So it's rampant.
Well, I remember that as a child. People getting polio, and there were certain areas at the beach in L.A. that we couldn't play because the water.
Uh-huh. I never understood it when I was growing up. My mother wouldn't let us go into public pools.
Especially shallow, stagnant, yes.
Right. So,
but she didn't tell you the reason, or she didn't maybe really know it?
I just obeyed.
Good for you. Oh, that's nice.
And I do remember taking a little sugar cube when they inoculated all the kids in grammar school.
Oh, so you never got the injection?
No, it was a sugar cube.
Well, I'm older than you are then because it was first an injection. Sugar cube came later.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So does the same inoculation protect against polio plus?
Yeah, well, it's a new
inoculation,
but uh-huh. it's, I guess, a drop that uh-huh. they just administer.
So where did it show up? And you said
in third world countries.
Uh-huh. Is it here at all?
I think we've actually eliminated it 99%.
That's what I thought it was gone, yeah.
We got a big boost from the Gates Foundation. They donated $250 million
Whoa.
Towards it.
And wow, we for you to take it into other countries.
Right. But this is
That's
a worldwide
yes.
Effort. Rotary has raised millions of dollars towards
for
it.
Disease control.
Yes. But then what's interesting about Rotary is we not only have international and local projects. Internationally, you can team up with another club mm-hmm. that's in a different country.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh.
you contribute money to their project, and in turn they will help out locally.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the international projects that we've done were... there was a wheelchair project in Mexico where we'd raise money and send wheelchairs down for people.
So what Rotary does really reaches individual people who have
yes.
a critical need.
And we mm-hmm. we have had water projects where we will pay to have a fresh water well in a remote village.
Mm-hmm.
In Vietnam, we did compassion houses, they were called. They were... a prefab type house that for a certain amount of money we could build a house for a family instead of having them use a
uh-huh.
a thatched roof that get wiped out every
what do you build
season.
Them out of
concrete
oh actually real houses not like tin
right
uh-huh
and it changes their life.
Is this getting harder for you to do with increasing and increasing and increasing population?
Well, it just seems that there are enough clubs that are, you know,
mm-hmm.
handling different things.
Yeah.
Locally, we support, our club supports Galileo High School. We offer scholarships on a yearly basis, and we do community projects in the area in Fisherman's Wharf, help with cleanup. And,
nice.
It's important that in the high school, there are what's called the Interact Clubs, which are... high school versions of Rotary.
Oh, nice. So you can
and
bring...
It instills in young people social responsibilities.
And a way to act and get things done. That's wonderful. Let me ask you something, since I am about love letters. Mm-hmm. If you were to write one right now, who would you write it to? Or do you write love letters? I know you send flowers, and I think many people feel that the flowers are the love letter, and I would say yes. But how nice to include a real letter with it. Do people send you cards in their own handwritings to send the flowers with?
Occasionally, but usually...
they tell you on the phone with it.
Some of them know what they want to say. Help people a lot with what to
their
say.
Their love letters. Here's a whole new wrinkle.
So
that's kind of a daily thing for you, expressing other people's love.
Done hundreds of them.
Do you like doing that?
When it works, yeah. Mm-hmm. Usually, I kind of have to pry into what the situation is.
Yes, of course you do.
To come up with the right sentiment.
That's something about love letters anyway. You know, a good love letter can be short if it's to the right person. Just, I love you, and maybe the one reason is a wonderful love letter. But even when you're doing your own, that phrase, I have to pry in. You can't write your own love letter without prying in to your own heart and mind.
Well, if you want it to be truthful, yeah.
Right, exactly. So do you ever write them yourself, for yourself? Like to family members or friends or...
Occasionally when it... I'm kind of... My sentiments are kind of short, sweet.
So who would you write one if we were to just pick somebody in your life right now for you to write one? I'm hoping you're going to go home and do it. Who would you send one to?
Thought of who I would do that to.
See, and I even like what you're saying there. We don't have to come up with somebody even. But the fact that you said I haven't thought of who I would do it, sometimes I find, you have a positive thought about somebody or a thank you to somebody, right?
You know, for me, I can't come up with something ahead of time. If it's a certain situation, a birthday or... someone's sick or something's happened.
Yes.
I need that kind of incentive.
But you do it.
But I do it, yeah.
Wonderful. So that's a good point. You know, sometimes I just during the day will think of somebody I want to say hello to and just say, I remember when I was 12 and you did this for me. And I want to say just it still has effects and thank you and you're just great for having done that. Something like that. You know, I do that because I like to do it. But for people who don't, you're right, a birthday or waiting for a special occasion, you can still do something great for people, yes. And your own handwriting?
Yeah, I guess.
That's nice.
With the computer age, a lot of our...
That's right. It's tempting not to.
Well, in our business, we were computerized, but we... Our cards are presented very nice. They're on a laser printer with our own special card text.
Sure. But there is something about handwriting. And by the way, I'm long overdue one for you because you deserve one for me because, as I say, I did my daughter's wedding flowers because it turns out that the florist she had hired just was not calling her back and... So my daughter said, you know what, she's not calling me back. You can do my wedding flowers, right? And I thought, why not? And so I went down there, and I bought tons of flowers and did it, and her wedding bouquet. Mm-hmm. Now, you know how expensive wedding bouquets are.
Yes.
And I got the most beautiful collection of white flowers, and I laid them out on a table. I mean, I must have done, for minimum cost, a wedding bouquet that I'm sure would have cost $300.
That's about right.
So thank you, Larry Hugazian. You're gonna hear from me in writing. I may even send you a picture of it if I can find it. Okay. Well, thank you for doing this with me. I'm so interested in what flowers say. And I'm really touched by the fact that you write the love letters, you write the cards for people, and that you know to pry in a little bit to see what it is they want to say.
Well, you have to.
Yes, you have to. I think that is just the final word on it. You have to do it well. And like you said before, for it to be true. So I want to say again, thank you, and thank you for telling us about Rotary. And I want to say, like I always do, if you think you have to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, Please remember that writing a love letter is a special occasion, made even more meaningful by sending flowers with it. Thank you, dear.
Thank you.
Goodbye. I'll talk to you all later.